Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here with Faith Tibbetts McDonald. She is the author of On the Loving End of Crazy, Finding Hope and Help to Face Your Loved One's Crippling Anxiety and Depression. Faith McDonald, how are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Doing well. And I should say that you're also a professor over at Penn State. Is that correct?
Yeah, a teaching professor, which makes a difference there. But Penn State University and State College.
Yeah, well, listen, let me just say this. It's an important book. And, you know, I know a lot of people are giving you high praise for it, and they should, for good reason. It's an important book, and basically, if you think about it, the very few people that we know are not dealing with anxiety and depression, especially during a pandemic. Give us the origin of the book. Give us the genesis.
The book started after my son struggled with anxiety and depression. Our oldest child went to college, and instead of succeeding, he failed in a very big way and ended up getting arrested because of too much alcohol and things like that. And so as we began to look for help, it took a few years before we realized he was dealing with very crippling anxiety and depression. He tried to self-medicate, and then that just got him into a worse place.
I mean, is it fair to say that the majority of us are dealing with some kind of anxiety, even before pandemic and everything else hit? Most of us are dealing with anxiety and depression in some form. It's just the levels, I imagine, that is what differentiates all of us.
Yeah, I wonder about that sometimes. We all feel certain levels of unhappiness or wondering isn't there more to life or things like that. Matt's depression and anxiety really interfered with his life. And I think when anxiety and depression interfere so you can't go to work or get up and go to class, then it becomes a more severe problem than, say, your average feeling of unhappiness or I feel anxious about something.
Is there less of a stigma attached to anxiety and depression and quite frankly mental illness than there was I'm 53 years old, so let's assume back in the 70s and 80s that there was a dark ages. Certainly not compared to the 50s and 40s and things like that. But, even in the 70s and 80s, it doesn't seem like there was the acceptance that we have nowadays.
Right. I think even in the last decade, things have changed a lot. In the beginning of Matt's illness, when I tried to get help for him, I felt very much alone in this situation, and I felt kind of embarrassed. Now people are much more open in talking about it. There's a big push, at least at Penn State and I think other universities, to get college students the mental health help they need. And people far more open these days than they were, I'd say, a decade ago.
Are you folks over at Penn State, are you dealing with online situations mostly? Are you dealing in class, or is there a combination?
There's a combination. I'm actually teaching online via Zoom, which I don't think helps anyone's mental health, really.
Yeah, right.
Zoom seems to let us think we're having this connection with people, but it's really not the warm connection that is nurturing for all of us. So I teach a business writing class, and last semester, just 3 weeks into the quarantine or the social isolation, I said to kids, well, what's a difficult conversation you'd like to be equipped to have? And I thought they would say things like how to negotiate a raise or how to, deal with a team member who's not pulling their weight, because it was a business communication class. And overwhelmingly, they said, I need to know how to ask for mental health help. And that was just in, you know, 3 weeks into this social distancing. So now I think people are struggling even more.
Let me remind folks, if you're just tuning in late or turning on your radios a little late, Frank McKay here with Faith McDonald. She is a professor over at Penn State University, and she is the author of On the Loving End of Crazy, which is a book, and she gives real-life accounts of what happened in her life dealing with mental challenges that many folks are dealing with, and again, I'd like to think that there's a lot less of a stigma attached nowadays, but again, there still is. I mean, you still hear people, even in the title of the book, and she's using it lovingly, crazy, and you know, how often do we deal with mental disorders, and we kind of group everybody together? But Frank McKay here with Faith McDonald. Address that if you would. I mean, there's certain language that we would use nowadays that we wouldn't use when you and I were growing up, and I'm just assuming that you're closer to my age range if you have children that are in college at this point. So you know it's not like you just got here and then they slapped the book in front of you. You know, you've been dealing with and seeing how they've been, handling mental illness all of these years. What can you say about the growth of it?
The growth of?
Of understanding.
The book? Or the...
No, well, we'll go into the book in a second.
I think that especially nowadays, younger people are more willing to say, talk about anxiety or talk about depression. But it's still hard for people to say, wow, I'm so depressed, I can't get out of bed. Or maybe even depression is a word we throw around a lot. To say more like, well, I have an anxiety disorder or anxiety is interfering with my life, probably that's less common.
Yeah, well, when you were growing up, I mean, what was the first, interaction that you had with mental illness? Was it a family member? Was it a neighbor? Was it somebody? Was it a stranger? What was the first time you recognized mental illness?
Yeah, actually, probably. And my husband's mother struggles with depression. But when you say the word mental illness, I know my dad, he is a pastor. He did a internship in a hospital for the mentally ill. And to me, in my mind, is my first, like, oh my gosh, my dad's an intern at this hospital. I was very young then, and so I had this idea that there was regular people, and then there were these people who lived in this hospital for the mentally ill, and it seemed kind of intriguing, but also sinister in a way.
Yeah. Listen, without question, there's always been that, and there still is. I mean, when you talk about a hospital for the mentally ill, this is a little different than what we're discussing here. And again, Faith McDonald is the author of On the Loving End of Crazy. Frank McKay here with Faith. If you can, apply, and again, there's differences. And you mentioned Matthew's your son. There's differences between what Matthew was dealing with, which is more to the extreme, and what students going back into, normalized situations, or what we would call normalized situations, coming from quarantine into situations of crowds and so forth. Discuss the latter. Discuss the idea of coming out of an isolated situation where we're worried and we're watching and we're studying all the different things that can happen with coronavirus, and now being told, look, you got to get there, you got to interact, you have to be there, keep your distance, keep your mask on, but at the same time, you're no longer alone, get out there again. How's the adjustment period being handled by, Penn State, for one, and then secondly, by the students?
Yeah, I don't think Penn State's there yet, telling people to get out. We're still, you know, quarantining, socially distanced. Excuse me. I have heard students say, sorry, you know, I won't know how to get back out in the crowd, or I don't know how to be with people again. My personal opinion is that technology was interfering with people's ability to connect warmly and in conversation. You know, we were getting really distracted. Students do a lot of things through text that, you know, really shouldn't be done by text, you know, breaking up with each other or saying in person, hey, yeah, I'll meet you, you know, for a certain social thing, and then later on texting and saying, oh, I can't be there. So I think there was that component, and then this additional component of we've spent so many months alone at home, isolated from other people, that it makes us feel apprehensive about going back and feeling like, you know, I don't even know how to get ready to go out and be in a crowd, and then I have to wear this mask and I'm supposed to stand 6 feet away. So I think there's lots of things that people feel anxious about.
What's the difference in, you know, in the business world, as opposed to what it was prior to the, you know, and again, you're teaching the class, and that's why I ask you, but prior to the pandemic and the anxiety that goes along with dealing with those situations? I mean, you brought up the example of what the students were asking you, but what do you think the big difference is here now that we've experienced and we've tasted some of pandemic living and getting back into that business world?
Well, one very vivid thing is people don't shake hands anymore. Or if you're in a situation where prior you would have shaken a hand, there's this awkward feeling of, well, I guess, do I shake his hand? I don't know if that's quite what you were thinking about, but I know I've been in business situations where I thought, I don't think I'm supposed to shake hands right now, but it feels awkward.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a new normal. I mean, I usually, like, reach my elbow out, and you know, most people aren't opposed to that, you know, kind of bumping elbows type of thing, and people do the fist bump. But again, we're going to have to get used to that. There's going to be a new normal coming around, and especially if we have this second wave. And as you and I speak, you know, it looks like there is a second wave, if the first wave is ever gone away or not. It looks like we're heading for some, you know, more of what we had back in March and April, and I hope not. I mean, I hope I'm completely wrong. But when you deal with a business situation, I think the safe thing to do maybe is to bump elbows, stick your elbow out rather than the hand, and less people are going to be offended by then. I remember it used to be a discussion on how to deal with, for example, Japanese businessmen, you know, how you hand your card, how you shake hands, or how you greet someone. You know, there was even in the extreme situations of bowing and whatever. All of that's out the window now. Now it's safety. It's how do I keep this other individual safe, and how do I show respect for the person across from me that I'm not taking for granted their health or whatever. And, you know, if you think about that, it's a much different situation than wondering about hurting someone's feelings.
Yeah. It's very cumbersome, you know, and different individuals feel differently about masks. So you go in and you're just so many things that are different and kind of, I think, produce anxiety in meeting someone new or being in a social situation.
On the Loving End of Crazy is the name of the book. Faith Tibbetts McDonald is the author. It's a wonderful book. It's getting rave reviews. Everyone's got to get it. And again, the tagline on it is long, finding hope and help to face your loved ones' crippling anxiety and depression, kind of says it all. And if we can, getting back to the book, how many, I don't know if you've quantified it any, in any way or not, but what would you imagine? Is there a 1 in 10 chance that you're dealing with this as a parent? Is there a 3 in 10 chance, a 5 in 10 chance? What would you say is a good gauge of who's going to have to deal with a child that's dealing with severe anxiety or severe depression?
Well, in 2016, Penn State did a survey. It was a nationwide survey, and they found that 33% of college students said that they experienced depression or anxiety so severe that they couldn't get out of bed, that it interfered with their ability to get to class. Probably not maybe long term, like 33% of kids didn't drop out, but they were claiming to be concerned about their own mental health. And now, you know, that was pre-pandemic. Now I think there's even more. And a parent who can be in tune and a parent who can say to their, you know, their young adult child, I've noticed that, you know, anxiety seems to be affecting your life, or I've noticed that depression is interfering with your ability to get good grades. You know, could we get some help? There'll be so many steps ahead of where I was when our son was struggling, and I didn't really have an approach. And that's part of why I wrote the book, is I wanted to help parents not have to learn by experience like I did. We had to go through everything, and then after we'd made 5 mistakes, think, oh, well, here's what we should have done. You know, here's the person we should have contacted for help. Help is hard to find when you're struggling with mental illness. You have to get on waiting lists for counselors, waiting lists for psychiatrists, in addition, you know, to the stigma, to the feeling like, oh, if I was a stronger person, I wouldn't have to be on this waiting list.
If you think that 33% is an uptick from where we would have been in the 70s or 80s if that same poll was taken, what is responsible for the uptick? And I know a lot of people point to social media and to certain technology. Or is it just a better understanding of our own feelings or people's own feelings where they could talk about this?
Yeah, it must be a combination of the both, I would think. You know, I do think I've read a lot about how social media causes kids to become addicted to that little ping, you know, and then just kind of search for more and more validation through social media, which we know isn't the warm human connection that is nurturing. I don't think social media, unless you're managing it, is a nurturing medium through which to contact people. You know, some of it is, but a lot of it, I think, what do they call it? The fear of missing out, FOMO. You know, kids talk about getting FOMO, and I think social media propagates kind of a dissatisfaction with people's lives. Nobody posts about their really bad days on social media.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a big part of it, too, and you know, you hear all these studies about how folks think it leads to even suicides, because when people look at other people's social medias, they're not showing them yelling at their kids, or they're not showing them getting into that little fender bender or missing a date or missing something. They're showing them usually smiling with this loving family and surrounded by loved ones on a birthday or some kind of celebration. And if you don't have any of that going on, you might be, saying, hey, why is everyone's life so great and mine's not? And again, I think people should be aware of that now, that, social media is just, the facade and everything else. But you just never know. All right, we got a couple minutes left with Faith McDonald, the author of On the Loving End of Crazy. Tell us a little something about the book that we haven't covered, and let us know where to get it, the best place to get it.
Well, I think the book is for parents or people who love someone who's struggling with anxiety and they feel helpless and hopeless. My purpose for writing was to educate, to say these are tools you can use, but also to say you're not alone in this. As a parent dealing with this, I felt so alone and like, well, everybody else's kid is succeeding, going on with college, their career, and my kid is not. And that was a very, very lonely place. So I think the book will help you know that you're in company. You know, there's company there. You're not the only person alone. And then we'll give you tools that you can use to navigate this very, it's such a challenging thing. And the challenge is, how do I help my kid or how do I help the person I love? But also the challenge of managing your own emotions. You know, how do I feel happy when my kid is in bed with the covers over his head? Or how do I feel happy when my kid is saying he doesn't want to live anymore? And of course, you wouldn't feel happy in that situation. But I guess what I'm saying is, how do I maintain a balance and navigate my life while I'm also helping my kid, you know, navigate a very difficult time?
I get it.
And the book, you can get it at Amazon, or I have a book website, faithmcdonald.com. I blog about issues related to mental health and other things.
Listen, Faith McDonald, congratulations on the book. And again, you're getting rave reviews. And thank you very much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And I hope that there's somebody out there who, you know, needed encouragement today to know that, hey, there's hope. That was the other thing. When my son was going through it, I didn't know there was a way to get healthy. And there really is, even though so many people are struggling with this very debilitating, crippling, you know, strong anxiety and depression.
Well, listen, Faith, thanks for being here. Thanks for writing the book. And we'll talk to you again. Hopefully we'll get you back for a part two one of these days.
Oh, thank you so much, Frank.
Faith McDonald, everyone. On the Loving End of Crazy, Finding Hope and Help to Face Your Loved One's Crippling Anxiety and Depression. Frank McKay here with the Penn State professor and author, Faith Tibbetts McDonald. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.